This is the American Ag Network Week in Review. In the show today, Rusty Halvorsen gets us caught up on the week's top news.
The Senate on Thursday cleared a minibus spending package that covered $214 billion in government spending for fiscal year 2020, which melded the agriculture, commerce, justice, interior, environment, and transportation spending bills all together. Sources say further progress is not guaranteed because of Democratic objections to border wall funding. The EPA's supplemental proposal for the 2020 biofuels and 2021 biodiesel levels under the RFS published in the Federal Register. No major changes to the plan the agency released earlier in October. The RFS was in the headlines Tuesday via a House hearing regarding the small refinery exemptions granted by the Trump administration. Jeff Cooper, president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, was a witness at that hearing.
We have seen 19 ethanol plants, at least 19 plants, idle or closed since spring of 2018 when this issue really began. When an ethanol plant goes down, the local community suffers. We're talking about lost jobs. We're talking about a reduction of 20 to 25 cents per bushel in corn prices. We estimate that, you know, with these 19 plants that have recently idled or closed, we're talking about 700 direct jobs that have been lost and about 2,800 jobs indirectly that have been affected in related sectors.
Cooper says the SREs are a raw deal for the renewable fuels industry.
The bait and switch employed by EPA in this latest proposal does not ensure that the statutory volume for conventional biofuels will be enforced in 2020 or beyond. And we think it is likely the 2020 requirement for conventional biofuels could again be eroded to less than 15 billion gallons. In short, EPA's proposal will not bring idled plants back online, and it won't put furloughed workers back to work. I want to close by expressing RFA's strong support for HR 3006, where I come from would call that 30-06, which begins to resolve some of the problems we are discussing today. The bill would ensure EPA's final RVOs are actually enforced and not eroded by SREs. The bill also contains important provisions that would greatly enhance transparency.
A new sign-up for the General Conservation Reserve Program is coming up in December, and USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey expects more applications than the last time around.
And I think everybody's aware the last sign-up was a fairly small sign-up. There wasn't a lot of acres available. The acres over the previous farm bill went down over the length of the farm bill, and so even the acres that were expiring could not all be renewed, let alone new acres get into that process. In this farm bill, we start off with 24 million acres as a cap, and we go to 27 million acres by the end of the farm bill. So what we'll be signing up for in December is acres that will go into the program in October of 2020. So it seems like a long ways away, but obviously it's just after this next crop. So by that time, the cap will be 25 million acres. We're at 22.3 right now. We'll have a few acres that will come in with continuous enrollment and a conservation reserve enhancement program. But we have a large amount of acres that are expiring in September of 2020. That, along with the acres that just expired as well, and the extra cap that we have, will have acres available for folks. So more information coming in the next few weeks. We still have our rule in clearance process, so we're not able to release all the pieces yet. You mentioned that the payment rates are capped due to the Farm Bill provisions that passed a year ago. General enrollment cannot exceed 85% of the county rental rate, and continuous enrollment cannot receive more than 90% of the average county rental rate. And so those rates are established internally. We're getting to the place where we'll be able to release those in pretty short order as well, so folks will know what the limits to those payments are as well.
The government will accept as many qualifying applications allowable under the law, but how close they'll get to that cap is still unknown.
We just don't know how to gauge right now the level of interest, both with the economy, the ag economy, and the payment rate limits. Just been so long since we had a general enrollment open, it's hard to know exactly how many offers will come in. We'll accept up to those offers that make good sense as good value for the program, and certainly the intention of Congress is to be able to have that many acres in the program. So if it makes sense to do that, we'll certainly get closer to that than where we're at right now.
According to the president of the World Organization for Animal Health, around a quarter of the world's pigs are expected to die from African swine fever, could lead to possible food shortages and high pork prices. Chinese authorities have destroyed about 1.2 million pigs in an effort to contain that disease in China since August of 2018. In the fight and protection against ASF, fragments of the virus have been found in almost half of sampled pig products seized at Australian airports. That, according to Australia's chief veterinary officer, Australia has not had any cases of the live virus. The U.S.-China trade war continues to drag on Archer Daniels Midland. The Chicago-based company says U.S. agricultural exports remained in a tough spot with both volumes and profit margins lower. Corteva reports a big boost in seed sales in the company's third quarter, but not a big quarter. The doubling in seed volumes for the quarter reflecting many sales that got pushed back from the springtime due to the persistently wet weather that kept many farmers out of fields. North American rail traffic fell 8% last week amid across-the-board declines in freight categories in the U.S., that according to the Association of American Railroads. U.S. rail traffic tumbling 8.8% last week following an 8.6% drop a week earlier. Carloads originated for grain down 9.2%. USDA introducing a new rule that will establish what the department hopes will be a consistent regulatory framework around hemp production. An interim final rule establishing a U.S. domestic hemp production program published in the Federal Register this week. The time is drawing near for USDA to decide if it will issue a second tranche of market facilitation payments for farmers who have been damaged financially by the ongoing U.S. trade war. According to USDA, a second round of payments following up on the payments made in late August would be issued in November. A new rule replacing the Obama-era definition of waters of the U.S. is expected from the White House in the next few months. But in the meantime, federal courts face conflicting lawsuits over the jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act. Don Parrish with the American Farm Bureau says farmers and ranchers are stuck in limbo.
We're kind of in a no man's land right now because the comment period is closed and the agency is deliberating and going through those comments and they're having to respond to them. So we're expecting, and they keep, you know, talking about it openly, at least Administrator Wheeler has been, that says he wants this rule, this new rule that is going to be protective of water but yet provide the kind of clarity that we think farmers and ranchers deserve. He says that's going to be available right around the end of the year or very early in 2020.
Two lawsuits were filed following the publication by EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers of a regulation repealing the 2015 WOTUS rule, known by its supporters as the Clean Water Rule.
You have two different groups right now. You have Pacific Legal in New Mexico, and you have the Southern Environmental Law Center with some other environmental groups in South Carolina, both indicating that it could take a while for EPA to finalize a replacement rule. So they are challenging the repeal rule for different reasons. Obviously, the environmentalists in the South Carolina case are arguing that repealing this rule unlawfully, you know, constricts or changes the Clean Water Act definition of what is a water of the U.S. In the case of Pacific Legal, they're arguing that the regulated community has been for too long regulated by guidance documents, and those guidance documents do not reflect the limits of the Clean Water Act or the limits of Supreme Court decisions. So, you know, we've just got a lot going on, including having the Obama rule right now implemented in 22 states. So there is a real patchwork of issues out there, and that's one of the things that we've appealed to the South Texas court and the South Georgia court to help us remedy. You know, this patchwork is a really bad situation, and it's one that confuses the regulators, and it definitely confuses the regulated community.
Those court challenges and the ones to follow are certain to extend the confusion long associated with WOTUS. Grain prices are expected to stay mostly subdued as traders await the next WASDE report November 8th. Arlen Suderman with INTL FC Stone says neither bulls nor bears have an upper hand in this environment. There's not much fresh crop news or demand developments to get traders fired up either.
So rallies get sold because it really doesn't have any justification for sustaining a rally right now. It's become very skeptical of any increased demand news or of shorter crop news. And at the same time, breaks get bought because funds are really wary of being short in this environment when we could get a surprise on both the supply and demand side. So we're just kind of chopping around and marking time.
The cancellation of an Asia-Pacific summit is complicating efforts by the U.S. and China to complete and sign a limited trade agreement designed to keep new tariffs at bay. Business groups counting on the completion of the Phase 1 deal in the coming weeks. Arlen Suderman, once again.
Well, ironically, now China's balking about having to buy more than what it needs, so to speak. And the original commitment of $50 billion in ag commodities was going to be a stretch. That's far more than they've ever purchased before. Obviously, that's a product of both quantity and price. So if prices go up, then obviously it'd be easier to hit that, and the farmers would love to see higher prices, although end users wouldn't necessarily. But China has kind of balked at that all along, and they've said, well, you know, let the market forces work. A state-controlled economy now suddenly worried about market forces. But in the end, they're not going to buy more than they need or not significantly more over a long period of time, regardless of what they say in agreement. That's just what their history says. But at the same time, they do need some type of an agreement. They want an agreement. Obviously, President Trump needs and wants an agreement to help his reelection campaign in the face of an impeachment inquiry. So there's a lot of forces moving both of them to find a way to get an agreement, and it has to be an agreement that looks good to their constituency on both sides. So they're moving that direction. That's why the November 17th date has kind of been the target. And now here in the last 10 minutes or so, we find out that meeting in Chile that where they were going to sign the agreement has been suspended because of the violent protests in Chile. So they have to find a new date, and maybe that gives them a little bit of freedom to have a little bit more time to work out these details to get an agreement.
U.S. chicken prices have been sagging thanks to abundant supplies, but may soon see gains if China follows through with buying more in the wake of its decision last weekend to remove a ban on U.S. poultry exports. Share prices of chicken producers taking flight. Sanderson Farms earlier the week seeing a boost in shares, jumping nearly 16%. Kellogg is riding the wave of interest in meat alternatives with growth in its Morningstar Farms brand in the latest quarter. The chief executive saying it's also done well in breakfast meat alternatives and poultry alternatives. As Beyond Meat expands its plant-based burger-making capacity for $1 billion worth of sales by the middle of 2020, Credit Suisse analysts don't see anything stopping the company from reaching that milestone in the near future. The path to $2 billion looks trickier, though, as rival Impossible Foods rolls out its own plant-based burgers in grocery stores. Plant-based food advocates criticizing federal legislation introduced earlier this week that would constrain vegan-friendly products' use of some meat-oriented terms. Folks at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association are thrilled and grateful for the legislation, according to Danielle Beck.
This bill has been months in the making, and it was sort of a collaborative effort, a brainchild of NCBA's in partnership with our allies on the Hill. And really, the bill does a couple of really important things. First, it codifies a definition of beef for the purpose of labeling. And so right now, as law, there is a definition of beef under the Beef Promotion and Research Act of 85. It's, you know, the checkoff legislation. It defines beef, and part of the congressional intent statement recognizes that, you know, U.S. beef is a huge driver for our American economy, and codifying those definitions is done so in an effort to promote demand for beef, both, you know, foreign and here at home. But that definition hasn't applied for labeling purposes. And so we're in this weird gray area where these imitation products regulated by FDA are able to exploit a loophole. So we codify that definition and hopefully, you know, close that loophole up. We define clearly what is an imitation meat product or an imitation beef product, and reiterate that FDA is required to adhere to the same provisions spelled out under the original Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And basically, any product that's trying to ride off of the coattails of beef's good name needs to have the word imitation preceding that product name.
The next step is introducing companion legislation in the Senate.
You know, I think we have a long road ahead. Our next big focus is getting a companion bill introduced in the Senate. We've already had several offices reach out. We've got ongoing conversations there. You know, at the end of the day, though, we want to make sure that this effort is bipartisan because that's the only way that we're going to have a shot at getting this across the finish line.
That's what's happening in agriculture. I'm Rusty Halverson from the American Ag Network.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill for Rusty Halverson and myself. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week.